Blog Talk Radio.
The coconut nut is a giant nut. If you eat too much, you get very fat. Now, the coconut nut is a big, big nut, but this delicious nut is not a nut. It's the cocoa fruit.
It's the cocoa fruit
of the cocoa tree.
Of the cocoa tree.
From the cocoa palm family. There are so many uses of the coconut tree. You can build a bigger house for the family. All you need is to find the coconut man. If he cuts the tree, he gets the fruit tree. The cocoa fruit
is the cocoa fruit
of the cocoa tree.
Of the cocoa tree.
From the cocoa palm family.
Coconut,
the coconut bark for the kitchen floor. If you save some of it, you can build a door. Now, the coconut trunk, do not throw this junk. If you save some of it, you'll have a second floor. The coconut wood is very good. It can stand 20 years if you pray it would. Now, the coconut root, to tell you the truth, you can throw it or use it as firewood. The coconut leaves, good shade it gives, for the roof, for the walls, up against the eaves. Now, the coconut fruit, say my relatives, make good cannonballs up against the sea. It's the cocoa fruit.
It's the cocoa fruit
of the cocoa tree.
Of the cocoa tree.
From the cocoa palm family. The coconut nut is a giant nut. If you eat too much, you get very fat. Now the coconut nut is a big, big nut, but this delicious nut is not a nut. The coconut nut is a giant nut. If you eat too much, you get very fat. Now the coconut nut is a big, big nut, but this delicious nut is not a nut. Eat the cocoa fruit. Of the cocoa tree.
Of the cocoa tree.
From the cocoa palm family.
It's the cocoa fruit.
Of the cocoa tree.
Of the cocoa tree.
From the cocoa palm family. It's the cocoa fruit.
Of the cocoa tree.
From the cocoa palm family.
Well, hello, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening for some of us. My name is Diane D, and our show is called Keeping It Brief, and we are showcasing poetry from Late Night Poets members and Brevity Writers members. We have an awesome lineup today, and first off, I just want to introduce my co-host, and that would be Captain B2, Bobby, and Alchemist. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
I thought I was on answer.
So that's Bobby?
Yes, it is.
Awesome. And are you on with us, Alchemist?
I am. Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, great to have you. So happy to have you. How are you guys doing?
Splendid. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, yeah, I just got home from work, so I'm doing great.
Oh, that's always good. That's a good way to start a show is I'm done work.
Yes,
for
absolutely.
Me, I've been moving and I'm all moved in. I'm packed and I'm all set up.
Nice.
So it's a good day. It's like I'm happy. I had to miss last week, but I missed it. But this week, glad to be back. So we got a great show lined up today, guys. We have some carryovers from last week, which was, I think it was open poetry. I'm not quite sure. I could be wrong. I was wrong once.
No,
but,
probably wrong about that.
And we also have a theme today called fortune cookie.
Oh.
So we have a wonderful lineup. And Bobby, if I'm clear on this, you are going to load them into the post them into the forums for us.
I'm just as soon as I figure out where the hell I am. Here I am. Okay.
No worries.
And I've got my personal fuzzy. Stop! Would you just push that guy? my cat is demanding attention. So, okay, here we go. We've got, all right. I'm looking for the, what in the world? I'm sorry. I'm not completely organized here. Give me a moment. I'm going to refresh. And there we go. And here we are with Brevity Writers. Keeping it brief. There it is. There it is in all its glory. I've got this chicken dancing on my screen, though. who did that? Who did that? I've got this platoon of chickens out here. Okay. All right. There we go. We have Brevity Writers. I've got the part of the program board, and I am going to put the phone down. We're going to use more pens, and we're going to start out with carryovers from last show, and it's going to start with Autumn Colors, Arouse by Gary Rubin. I'm going to put that out on the inbox to keep the chickens company. Okay, and what happened? Oh, yes, thank you, computer. My computer said, no, I want to put this other post up here. Okay, sometimes the speed keys work, sometimes they don't. Okay, let's try this again. Okay, all right. Although I'm sure everyone will find the little blurb of enlightening. Here we go.
Now, is it posted?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I had to put myself on mute. I went into a coughing fit. Ooh, yeah, it's on Brevity Writers, right underneath the your post or Harco's post on poetry, Fortune Cookie. And I have the Autumn Colors, Arouse by Gary Rubin.
Okay, I'm.
Are you looking at Late Night Poetry or are you looking in Brevity Writing?
No, I'm looking at Brevity. I have it now. So, were you going to assign the readers as well?
Well, you know what? Since I seem to be way behind, let me go ahead and read and give everybody else a chance to get their footing. Okay, so we have Autumn Colors. Oh, sorry. By Gary Rubin, who looks like Kermit the Frog. Autumn Colors, Arouse. Trees dance seductively in the autumn winds. Tension in every capillary leaf branch builds. Color rushes to the surface as cheeks flush. Visual signs of peak arousal serve notice. Under soil bed sheets, root appendages curl. Every tree tries in vain to last. One by one, they release a colorful load onto the ground. Empty now, barren trees fall asleep, dormant, huddled together for warmth. Spooning, the night turns cold and damp. End poem.
Great, right? Great read. I enjoyed this brevity. Autumn colors arouse, great imagery, and with the, my favorite, capillary leafy branch builds color rushes to the surface as cheeks flush. The personification of the trees, and what a image, beautiful autumn image that creates in your mind. It just, it's colorful, and it's, there's, I can almost smell the freshness. And I love the way Gary put together the how they huddle together for warmth, spooning in the night. That just, I smiled when I read that. Very well done, enjoyable. And Alchemist, what did you think of this, my dear?
Yeah, I actually love this poem, and one of the reasons why I liked it so much is because we always think of autumn as being, getting ready for, like, death, right? Like, the trees are dying, and we're getting ready to go into winter. And, you know, he turns that on its head, and he makes it be almost like about life instead, and about love and sensuality and all that. And at the end, of course, they go to sleep, and they spoon, then the night turns cold and damp. But I would have never thought to write an autumn poem about trees turning and make it be like this, right? Make it be so seductive. So for me, this was extremely clever, and I really, really enjoyed reading this. I think my favorite line in it, I liked everything, but I think the color rushes to the surface as cheeks flush. Visual signs of peak arousal serve notice. Like, I just love that. I think it's so sexy and really smart and clever to do that with the autumn trees. And I don't think I'll ever look at autumn trees the same after reading this poem.
Yeah. So well said. Very well said. Because, like, it does. It's like the way you describe it. I could feel the growth going up the trees. I could feel the trees, the death actually rushing from the bottom of the tree up towards the tree, and how they're standing there together. Great, great imagery in there, and well described. And Bobby, my dear, what did you think of this?
I agree. It does personify the trees at the end of their season. They're disrobing. They're shedding themselves of their outer coverings. They're going to sleep, and they're going to don new foliage, and new growth, new clothing, as it were, in the spring. So it's an interesting parallel that I also never have considered it that way.
Yeah, very, very well written, and quite just pulled autumn right out for me. It just put me right in a place. And I'm looking out a gray window right now over the river, and the trees are all starting, not quite yet, but starting to do their things. So
yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful scene. Okay, so what do we have next on our list there, Bobby?
We have, by our incomparable Naomi Serra, we have Autumn Rain, and I'm going to ask the divine alchemist to read it.
All right. Excellent. Autumn Rain. Raindrops drum upon shimmers of sunlight to the delighted beat of rainbowed umbrellas dancing on glistening sidewalks. End poem.
Beautiful piece.
That's it.
It certainly is. It certainly is brevity, but it captures everything in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 words. It captures autumn rain and matches the serenades the image itself, and just beautiful writing to the image and to autumn rain itself. I'm starting to realize last week's show was about autumn. And it's just really well written, short, to the point, but packs a punch. Really good job, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you feel on this one?
I first off, I like the image with the multicolored umbrella, leaving a trail of color behind it. And just there's something endearing and absolutely charming about that little piece of artwork. And this reminds me of the brevity contests you see out there where they say, you know, say this in 15 words, say this in 10 words. And that is a real, I've gone into some of those contests, and that is a real challenge to really come forth with something that has a meaning and elegance and is very brief, very terse. Raindrops drum upon shimmers of sunlight. A rainbow umbrella is dancing. It's beautiful. I mean, the visual imagery is all there, and there's even sensory. They drum on the shimmers of sunlight. You see the sunlight. You hear the raindrops. She's done a very beautiful job of this.
Absolutely. She's captured the sound of the rain. She's captured it and moved it into a drumming and dancing on the sidewalk. Beautiful, beautiful use of sound and senses in this. So, yeah, and Alchemist, what did you feel on this one, my friend?
Yeah, also, I picked up on that, too, like the sound. And it rained where I live. It rained all weekend, and it was just so delightful. I was sick this weekend, and, you know, I just laid in bed and just listened to the rain drum, and it was just really, you know, hypnotic and nice. And that's how I felt about this. I could, you know, I could almost hear that, right, the rain coming down on top of the umbrella. And I like how she connected the upon shimmers of sunlight and then the rainbowed umbrellas, so that when, you know, when the sun's coming out a little bit and the rain comes down, we get the beautiful rainbows. So she put that on her umbrella, which I really liked. And then the glistening sidewalks, right? You can almost imagine it under, you know, walking down the street and the sun is just starting to come out, you know, as the rain is finishing, and you can see the beautiful shimmering coming up from the sidewalk, and you hear the sound, and it's just really peaceful, sweet poem, I thought. And I agree that the whole idea of brevity for me is so difficult. You know, I go on and on and on all the time, and to see someone do it so well is always inspirational to me. So I loved it. Great job, Naomi.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those things that I found it daunting, too, until I started trying my hand at brevities. And their work, because they require a laser focus on what you're trying to say. But you know what? After a while, it's one of those things that you can actually produce. But it does require practice. It really does. And I don't know if you've ever, and here Breeden goes again. It's only taken me a couple of shows. My obscure reference library is now open for business. The film A River Runs Through It. I don't know if anyone's ever seen it, but the premise is that it's a father and a family, father, mother, two sons, and the father is a minister, and he is teaching his sons to write. And the one son doesn't really care. He'd rather be outside fly fishing. But the one son really takes it seriously, and he'll give them an assignment, and he'll set them at the table, and he'll say, okay, write so many words. And they'll jump up and they run over, and the second son, who was really wants to master this, I think for as much for his father as for himself, the father reads it, runs a line for it and says, okay, reduce it by half. He hands it back. And this goes on several times. And he gets up and he says, okay. He says, reduce it by half. And then finally he gives him the speech and it just, okay, now you can go out. But and it's just a matter of doing that, is picking through it and picking out words that just don't do anything for the meaning of the piece. But it is a challenge.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I agree. It's a huge challenge. I can sum up in three words my brevity experiences, and it's not my forte. It's not mine. If I admire the brevity writers that can take this and know when to chop it off and wrap it up and say, okay, this is my piece. I never know when to do that. I go on until I realize I got a short friggin' story.
Right. Yeah,
but,
it is challenging, and I found it daunting too. I never thought I'd be able to do it. But I've, as you've heard from some of the stuff of my work I've read, I've actually produced some pretty decent brevities. So I think I've kind of got my head wrapped around it. But every time I confront it, it's a new challenge all over again.
Well, you actually have one coming up, Bobby, that I really like. There's one coming up from you that I read, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. The one that's coming up soon.
Brevity.
Yeah,
awesome. So where are we headed next, Bobby?
Okay, where are we headed next, Bobby? Bobby's not thinking, oh, come on, I put you in there. Where did you go? Oh, okay, there we go. We have, for our ever-loved Pink Fairy 5. Yeah, and the crowd goes wild. Harvest Fest's annual autumn fair. How would you like to do a read on that one, Diane?
Certainly can. Harvest Fest Annual Autumn Fair by Pink Fairy 5. Harvest Fest Annual Fair is the place we are heading today. Maisie, my dog, is totally excited. She loves the children. My own are grown and have moved to cities far away, where the jobs are away from their cousins and us. The smell of fall are in the air. The smells of fall are in the air. Pumpkin, cinnamon, applesauce. I am bringing homemade cyber apple cobblers and pumpkin pies, knowing that some customers will be eagerly looking for me. I love this time of year when I do not feel alone. Maisie wags her tail. End poem. Ah, Pink Fairy, this is beautiful.
Beautifully read. We're going to need a short story here.
It is a beautiful piece. Autumn Fair, and I love the image, the colors. Oh, now that's autumn. The pumpkins, the barrels, apple barrels and leaves and everything. Totally, she captures everything in this. And all the sounds, the smells, I'm drooling at apple cider and apple cobblers and pumpkin pies. It's like, wow, that just sent me into Wednesday. Oh, Canadian Thanksgiving is next week. Thank God. No, beautiful, beautiful write. And Alchemist, what did you see on this one, my friend?
Yeah, same thing. I actually baked an apple pie this weekend because I was so inspired by the poems that we read last week about autumn. So there's nothing better than having that smell in the house. And for me, this was really a sweet poem. And at the end, like a little sad, you know, and hopeful. Like I love this time of year when I do not feel alone. Maisie wags her tail because the poets, you know, children are away and they live in different cities and, you know, everybody's grown up and now it's like she's kind of having the empty nest syndrome, I guess. And I don't have children myself, but I can, you know, imagine what that would feel like after so many years of, you know, Halloween and doing crafts together and baking together and doing all that. And then once your children leave and you're just kind of there like, okay, you know, now what do I do? I thought this was a really sweet poem and a little sad at the end, I felt like.
Very well said. So true. I caught that too. What stood out to me was, or what I caught is what you said. I love this time of year when I do not feel alone. That stood out to me because isn't that true? And how can you feel alone in autumn? You just look outside and you know you're surrounded by nature and growth and life. you know. Mm-hmm. So how can you feel alone? So such a good line. I really enjoyed that line. It stood out to me
mm-hmm.
for an autumn poem. And Bobby, what did you think, my friend?
I think that the insertion of that line is an emotional pivot point for that piece because until you read that, there's no hint that there's even that feeling of being alone.
Mm-hmm.
When you read that, she tips her hand just a little bit, and but this is actually this is by way of a very short story. I mean, it's just so compact. It's a very economical write. You've got the fair, her dog who loves playing with children. She brings her things to the fair, and I think it's not started yet. My Magnolia is the front runner.
Bobby, you are breaking up a bit, my friend. Your audio is breaking up somewhat.
How's that? Any better?
Yeah, that seems better.
Okay. My Magnolia in the back is the harbinger. It's his front runner. When the great big palm sized leaves start yellowing and head dropping, and I know it's like the starting gun has been fired, and it does so very unremarkably. They just kind of, they're green one day, they're yellow the next, and the third day they're in my roommate's stairwell. So yeah, thank you, John. to me the fall is like the last hurrah. I mean, it's like nature knows it's got one last shot at just throwing spectacular color and mouth-watering fragrances and just putting on the last show. It's like the finale, and so it's where spring sort of sneaks up. It's almost got a little bit of stage fright. Fall goes out with just flags flying, you know, the nature's going, this is it. We got to throw everything we got out there, because the next thing we're going to be doing is we're going to be sleeping. And that's my impression of autumn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, autumn for me is nature's way of sugarcoating winter.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can't wait until winter comes so I can read you my brevity called Sugar Cookie, which is about winter.
There you go. Well, I can tell you, if you lived winter in eastern Canada, you would be writing different than sugar cookies. Sugar cookies about minus 41 degrees Celsius.
Nope. Matter of fact, one of my favorite limericks, I couldn't wait until I went to Canada so I could actually recite it. There once was a lad from Quebec who was buried in snow to his neck. When they asked, "Did you frizz?" he replied, "Yes, I is, but we don't call this cold in Quebec."
No, it's for a fact that. So where are we going next? We'll get through a few of these today.
We're gonna have some more beautiful, beautiful poetry. What is it with you, computer? Are we playing games with me today? Yes, we are. Okay. I thought I had the right. We have fortune cookie. Today's the fifth. Yes. All right. We're on planet Earth. I have to reassure myself of these little details sometimes. Okay, we have copy and all right. And after Pink Fairy 5, we have Sean Boshin and Charity. And let's see, give this a read. Okay. Oh, this sounds uplifting. Alchemist, would you like to read it for us, please?
Hold on. I'm a little lost. I think I'm on the wrong board, actually. Oh, here it is. I see. I was up higher. Okay, I got it. Charity. I didn't see this one. Hold on. I'm out of order. I thought there was hold on. Okay. I would love to read it. I don't think I saw this one. So this is going to be new for me. So hopefully I...
Oh, you'll be fine.
Okay, let's see. Charity. I'm blessed by newfound charity with sunlight spilling out windows as thoughts transform reality. Each new day is churning to compose a place bereft of fallacy, a place that every human knows, earthly haven, heavenly found, coexisting, adversity, left scoured, reborn, and unborn, and unbound, I'm sorry, to flower and bloom graciously, the soul and body left unwound, form fruits of virtue painlessly. End poem. Interesting.
Nice read. Yeah.
Great write, Sean. Great read, Alchemist. Charity, I'm blessed by newfound charity with sunlight spilling out windows. That just, what an image that creates, sunlight spilling out the windows. I mean, I've always imagined or seen sunlight coming in the windows, but sunlight going out the windows, that's just an image I never imagined before. Beautiful, though. Creates a lot of room in your mind to expand. Yeah, what did you read that so beautifully, Alchemist? What did you feel on this one?
Yeah, so I'm just going over it again. I'm sorry. Usually I'm more prepared and I read these beforehand, but this one I didn't see for some reason. So this is the first time I'm looking at it, and I can tell that it's going to have some things that I'm really going to like in it. So I just wanted to go over it again real quick. Just things that jump out at me. One of the lines is, as thoughts transform reality, each new day is churning to compose a place bereft of fallacy. And that's, you know, really powerful. It's just jumping out at me that, like, every day, you know, we're just trying to find some kind of truth, you know. We're just trying to find the answers. And as poets especially, I think that's what it's all about, right? It's so much about us just trying to... At least for myself, you know, it's about me just trying to figure myself out and figure out what's going on in my life. And a lot of my writing is about that. And I really feel that, you know, from those lines in this piece. Earthly haven, heavenly found, coexisting adversity, left scoured, reborn, and unbound, to flower and bloom graciously. Just such power in these words coming off the page. I got to go back through it. And it's a shame because I'm not doing it service because I haven't read it first. And this is the kind of poem that you do have to read a couple times in order to really get all of the richness that's coming from this. But I'm intrigued by it. Absolutely. What do you ladies think? Help me out a little bit because I know I'm not giving, doing justice to this poem.
Well, you did a wonderful read.
Earthly and heavenly found.
An unbelievable read and great description of it. Like what I pull out of it too, and I cheated. I read the author's notes here, and the start, adversity is the parent of virtue, and gratitude and virtue. That is a place in you. It is a place in you. It's not. It comes in. It's like the sunshine. Drawing in through the windows, and it settles in you. Charity settles in you, and your thoughts are transformed. And to say that adversity is the parent of virtue is adversity can. And the charity part, I think, is when you actually overcome adversity, because when you overcome adversity, you have to do it with humility and charity. And I just love the way this pulls out that that feeling that everything is okay. Like, you know, Sean talks of the anxiety and that this feeling of the sunlight spilling out the windows and stuff and transforming reality is a settling of a settling down of yourself. And I just found this just immensely metaphoric and beautifully written. And what did you think of this, Bobby?
I also read the author's notes, and it's surprisingly longer than the written piece, but gives you a sense of an insight into the author's feelings. And to have derived all of that from the little fortune cookie message very profound, very powerful piece that says is one of the things that cannot be gulped. It must be sipped. It must be absorbed. It must be meditated and rolled around in your hand and examined for all the little pieces of wisdom that will tumble from it. So it's beautifully written.
Very much so, beautifully written and hidden in there, like a place for rest of fallacy. You know, you imagine this place where you can go to compose yourself, a place that is lacking any fakeness, and that's what it's created, a place that every human knows. And we do know that place that we can go into ourselves and leave the fake and the fallacy behind. Powerful imagery in this piece. Thank you very much for sharing this with us, Sean.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Okay, and where might we be going next, my girl?
Okay, I've tossed a long one out there. I know the answers, but I can't solve them. By Darkened Auras, and I will go ahead and tackle this one. I know the answers, but I can't solve them. Questions are spinning in my mind. I know the answers too, but my crippling fear gets in the way, and I don't know what to do. I know I need a dentist badly. I haven't seen one in over a decade. So many chipped and broken teeth, and one past the point of decayed. I was taking acetaminophen, and ibuprofen for the pain. But they're no longer working well, and it's driving me insane. Will the pain ever get bad enough, cause me enough misery, that pain outweighs the fear? I guess I'll wait and see. The fortune was derived from it. You already know the answer to the questions lingering inside your head. End poem.
And you know what? That is very, very true, Dark Auras. We do know the answers. We have the answers in our head, but we're coveted by fear, and we're afraid, and fear takes those answers away because we can solve things. We have the answers, but we can't solve them if we have a block of standing in the way. And for me, dentist, I have so many problems because I take I'm on water pills and my mouth gets dry. So me and the dentist, we're best buddies. I go there often, and I have to because without her, I would be a mess. But to the description of the fear, and it's not just dentists. We fear so many things in life, and we have the answers to so many things in life, but we can't get to them because there's a fear block in our brain. And how to relieve ourselves of that fear so that we can find the answers. I've struggled with that so much in my life, and I know a lot of others probably do too. And Bobby, you read that beautifully. What did you feel on this one?
Sometimes it's not as much fear as it is indecision. We engineers like to call it analysis paralysis. You keep looking at the problem and looking at the problem, and thinking that perhaps you've missed the obvious solution, when in fact you haven't. And this poem really goes to the fact that you know what the problem is. You simply have to step forward and act on it. But the last line is the hook. That the pain outweighs the fear. I guess I'll wait and see. And there they are, trapped in analysis paralysis again. And it's like this do loop they go that someone goes into, and they find themselves looping back over on the same questions and the same answers. What is it Einstein said? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is the definition of insanity.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can do that with your thought process too. If you find yourself going down the same set of questions and arriving at the same solutions, expecting different solutions, then there's something skewed on your thinking.
and or something skewed in your something skewed in your thinking and something skewed in your, like fear. Fear stands for false evidence appearing real. And yeah. False evidence appearing real, it's not even sometimes like fear to me, man. It's like a delusion. I mean, yeah. Where I can go in my head with fear, it's like because I'm scared to death of, I can't do this because this might happen. I can't do this because this might happen. And what I've come to realize with fear is that every risk I take, it gets better and better, you know, and that's the thing about the fear clouding us. And it was a great wrap up, like absolutely, and then the pain outweighing the fear. Well said, well put, because the pain, that's why the fear is there, because the pain was past. But Alchemist, what did you see from this one?
Yeah, this is interesting, and it reminds me of myself in so many ways that I tend to do this with money, though. So I had a really big trauma that happened with money, you know, years ago. It was like 15 years ago, but I almost find myself like I'm so afraid to, like, to this day, and I have to catch myself, like, I'm almost like afraid to look at my bank account, like I'm almost afraid to. And it's this every time I go to buy something and I put my debit card in, it's like I'm afraid to that I'm not going to have enough money, or like that trauma. You know, even though everything's fine and I have enough to pay for everything, and it's not that, you know, it's not even a real fear anymore, but the trauma stays with you, and you have to, like, actively, when these fears come up, you have to actively say to yourself, okay, I'm feeling fear right now. This is what fear feels like, right? And the more you do that, the less the fear becomes once you name it and confront it. But I did the same thing though with the dentist. So like the same thing happened. I wouldn't go to the dentist for so long. And when I was younger, it was like I had all these traumatic experiences as a dentist. But for some reason, you know, 25 years later, it started to come back. And all of a sudden I became like afraid to go to the dentist out of nowhere. And it was just a strange thing. So, yeah, I really get this, that the end where she says, you know, will the pain ever get bad enough, cause me enough misery that the pain outweighs the fear? I guess we'll wait and see. And it's the same thing. It's like we avoid and avoid and avoid because we're afraid to face whatever it is, whether doctors, money, our relationships, our lives, like whatever it is. And so, yeah, this was awesome, I thought. This is deep. I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. I very, very much enjoyed this piece. And Bobby, my dear, where are we headed next?
Okay, we are on the road to poetry. We have, I guess I read that last one. Let's have Diane, can you read Lotus Test following? And
okay, is it posted?
Yes, ma'am, sure is. Oh, wait, there it is. Oh, it is.
There we go now. Okay. Following by Lotus Tassel. How the impatient winds and falling leaves go still in this moment, where autumn's solitude waits restlessly to get dissolved in scents of unborn flowers that follow your mellow footsteps. End poem. Now, see, there's another brilliant brevity. A brilliant brevity. You know, following. The title, it's like you're following the flow of the winds and the leaves, and you're following along with it. The unborn flowers that follow your mellow footsteps. Just beautifully written, beautiful metaphors, awesome piece of writing. And Alchemist, what did you feel on this one?
Yeah, I was struck by this too, how the impatient winds and falling leaves go still in this moment, that this is just a moment in time. Autumn solitude waits restlessly to get dissolved in scents of unborn flowers. So it's almost like I feel like she's, I don't know if I'm reading it right, but I almost feel like she's talking about in winter, right? So like when everything is, I know she's talking about autumn, but then I feel like she's going to winter where everything is sort of resting and waiting and the flowers are underneath and they're going to be born in the spring. But there's that moment though of the silence of winter, really. That's what I'm getting from it. And that it's more about, for me, this feels like it's more about winter. And the idea of rest, right? And it's a very peaceful poem anyway, when you read it. The way it flows is very peaceful. So I kind of got the idea that she was talking about winter in this poem. What do you guys think about that?
I like that. I like that because I see, you know, winter following. That makes a lot of sense. And winter, when autumn solitude waits restlessly for winter, that really stands out for me, Astrid. I like that. And Bobby, my dear, what was your feel on this?
I liked it is an elegant brevity. I like even the title, how impatient winds and falling leaves go still in this moment where autumn's solitude waits. I see what Alchemist is saying. To me, it is that pivot point. It is that precise moment when the leaves, for the most part, are the trees are denuded, the leaves are on the ground, they're being swept up into the little gavotte that leaves do when a small whirlwind catches them and spins them into this wonderful little dance. But it's that moment between the end of fall and the beginning of winter, and it's just like a twinkling of an eye, and she's caught it right here.
Yeah, she certainly did catch it, and that was well said, Bobby. I totally agree with that as well. Really powerful brevities today, and I'm loving catching up on this autumn theme. I missed it, and I'm really enjoying the writing on this. Amazing brevities. And Bobby, where are we headed next?
Well, there's this new author I've heard about. So many wonderful things. And I heard she's devastatingly attractive, too, and has the patience of Job because she teaches children. Goes by the clever name of Alchemist. And we have could we get her to read it, do you think?
Okay. Well, after that introduction, of course. So I did the fortune cookie thing, which I thought was really cute. And I got the one that I got was like, okay, this is really made for me, because it says, the fortune that I got says, you cannot love life until you live the life you love.
Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah, so I felt like that really fit where I'm at in life. So I write uncooperative cooperation, insensitive sensations, not where I'm supposed to be at 53. Happiness, a fleeting heartbeat, heated in the cauldron of shoulda, woulda, coulda. So I opened myself to me. Spend all the money on house plants, hang concert posters in the living room, paint dark hue, face is too small to hold it, bake from scratch, enjoy every bite, write poems, call in shows, showing myself the imposter is the real poser, hug myself to sleep at night, stand in beliefs, delve into divinity, even when others think it's crazy, create change to reimagine the limited range of so-called reality. End poem.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Wonderful.
So, yeah, so this is just sort of like where I'm at right now in my life. And, you know, life goes on and things don't really necessarily turn out the way you think they're going to. And, but you have to make it. You have to make it what you love. Right. So I think that's where I am right now. And I'm just trying to figure that out. Like, what do I love? What do I want to do? You know, I have this house and it's mine. And, you know, it's my first house I ever bought and by myself. And, you know, people want to give me all kinds of opinions on, you know, what I should do. Oh, that color's too dark. And, you know, that the house is too small. And you shouldn't be. And I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to do what I want. And I just do the things that make me happy, even if other people think that they're weird and whatever. So, yeah, that was a very good fortune for me, that one.
I think Diane, I can hear Diane thinking.
No, I was mutating.
Are you?
Okay. No, beautiful piece, Alchemist. I love the flow of it, the uncooperative cooperation. Great wordplay, insensitive sensations. I love the wordplay, and especially shoulda, coulda, woulda. So I opened myself to me, and you're so right. You can't love life until you live a life you actually can love. And I, right now, I have to say, I don't know when it happened, but it was almost 3 years ago. The universe did a 360, and I have been living ever since my best life. Like, my best life has come in the last few years. Everything is going my way. Everything is just flowing and going, and I am living the life I love. And I love the way you described this, and you pulled me in to the feeling of writing and writing poems, calling shows, showing myself the imposters, the real poser, hug myself to sleep at night. What a beautiful feeling that comes from the, you know, loving life and fitting in and living a good life. It's amazing, and I love what you did with it here. And Bobby, what did you feel on this?
Oh, I think this is a stunning write. I like its conversational tone. It's colloquial in nature. Spend all the money on houseplants. I love that. Hang concert posters in the living room. I love that one because I have ski posters in my living room. And ski posters climbing down the stairwell at the back in my great room. I like that. Paint dark hue and spaces too small to hold it. It is a wonderful piece. It basically my life, my choices, my rules. It's It's kind of like a piece I wrote about as an homage to my grandmother on her birthday, and I called it A Life by Design. And I have friends that I'm my roommate, my housemate says he looks at me. He's a gentleman about 74, and he's a gentleman of the old school. And he looks, I'll say something, and it comes out of 20 years of spending every waking moment with men, and having no. And he looks at me and goes, Bobby, you have no filters. And I'll smile. And I'll say, that's part of my charm. And
exactly.
My friends will look at me and go, Bobby, you're crazy. And I'll go, yes, but I'm happy this way.
Right.
And that's, I learned a long time ago that, unfortunately, because my partner, whom I loved dearly, unfortunately tried to change the core of who I was. And I never realized that until after he died, is that I was becoming something I did not like. And when I let go of that and became who I was to begin with, people were coming up to me and making comments about the changes. So I you opened yourself up to yourself, as you said it, right in the center. You're doing what pleases you. What is the, there's some a poem about old women. This is when I grow older, I will wear purple.
Right.
It's something to that effect that you know what makes you happy. And as long as it doesn't make someone profoundly unhappy, cause them a physical discomfort, then, why should anyone care what you do? Make yourself happy. And if people think you're crazy, you smile at them and say, yeah, but I'm happy this way. And if they tell you you're unfiltered, which I've been for years, they say, yes, part of my charm.
Yeah.
I look like the alchemist says, as long as your life isn't encroaching on someone else's well-being, then why should they give a good damn what you do?
I think too that like a lot of people feel almost like intimidated by that though, with women a lot of times, like when you're especially like this age, and you're like on your own and you're just doing everything and you're trying new things, so like just writing poetry is brand new to me. Like it's not something that I've, done in the past, and even calling in these shows and everything, like that was almost like my way. Like I went and I made the initiative to do this. Like nobody asked me to do this, like I called and said, can I do this? And I just wanted to try something different. And it's always this idea of, like, challenging yourself, right, to confront your fears and confront your, your idea of being an imposter or whatever.
Understand completely, because when I met my partner, he was an avid skier. I'd been a skier in college, but I had gotten away from it. Mostly because there's not a lot of places you can go skiing in the Mojave Desert. And so when he and I got together, do you like skiing? I said, yeah, I used to. And we started skiing again. And I didn't realize how my attitudes had changed from college to my mid-30s. Or no, my 40s. I found myself very daunted every time I had to get on the lift chair. And all you've got, once it lifts off and it's carrying you up the hill or up the mountain, you've got nothing below you but open air. And that used to make me, it was very disquieting. And I knew that I was always threatened or intimidated by getting up to the top of a mountain I had never skied before, not knowing where the hell to go. But I made myself do it every time, because I would not allow myself to be held hostage by fear. Because I saw what it did to my mother. She basically became a hermit after my father died. And I thought, life is such a gift. Why squander it that way? So I still try and make myself do things that I find intimidating.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, ladies, we have done 7 poems in an hour, so if we could just kind of move right along to our next piece, and let's get up our next piece so we can
and there
break
is.
It apart.
It's Cookout at the Beach. And
Cookout at the Beach.
Yeah, would you like that one, Diane?
I would like that one. Blue Butterfly. Cookout at the Beach. Waves of the blue ocean are dancing back and forth, reaching the sandy shore. As the hot brown sand beneath my feet curls between each of my toes. As the day ends and the night begins, I watch the gray moon replace the yellow sun, sending chilling winds to cool the land, while bonfires are lit with blazing flames. The crackling sound of wood snapping beneath the orange burning fire. The children play as the smell of cooked hot dogs fill the air, as grown-ups laugh and drink their beers. End poem. Cookout at the Beach, beautiful piece, Butterfly, Blue Butterfly, awesome, right? I love the scenes of all 3 stanzas. Each stanza has a separate scene to me. The first one grabbing the waves of the ocean dancing and the feel of the sand beneath your feet, and then goes into watching the night come in and replacing the sun, and bonfires are lit with blazing flames. And then the next stanza is the sound, bringing out the sounds of the fire and the wood snapping and children playing and grown-ups laughing. Just really reached out to the senses. It took me back. I was talking to a friend this morning about going camping, and this really took me to a place where I want that. I want to do that. That appeals to me right now. So, Alchemist, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to be invited, you know, to this the next time that they do this. It just sounds perfect, right? And all the senses, like you mentioned, are addressed here. And the crackling sound of wood snapping beneath the orange burning fire. And you can just imagine that on the beach. Right, you have the moon and the ocean, the waves, and just sitting back with a drink and relaxing, and the kids playing. It just sounds so idyllic. Like, I wish I was there right now. Beautiful poem.
Yeah, for sure. Beautiful piece for sure. And Bobby, what was your take on this? Bobby, are you mutating?
I am, and I'm brilliant too, damn it. I think a hot dog sounds really good right about now.
Yeah, it
does. I sometimes, when I look at a piece, I want to see the genesis of it. And so I went over to where the contest, it says contest, and the contest was called Use Your Senses. And when I looked at the contest, it says, use your senses, write a poem using all 5 senses, because Cookout at the Beach got a silver. So I looked at that, okay, contest by J. Tay. And if I look at J. Tay, and here is a poet who was 20 years ago in a car accident, broken spinal cord, paralyzed from the neck down. And she's got a big smile on her face. And I just I looked at that and I went, and here's a poem. There's a poet holding a contest about the senses. And I was thinking, what amazing depth of feeling and desire for learning and knowing and being to hold a contest like that when you're paralyzed from the neck down. So I have to take a salute to J-Tay for the contest. And Blue Butterfly's a silver winning entry, because you can feel the sand and taste the hot dog, and brings it all forward with such clarity and such elegance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definite bringing definite August into your, because, yeah, I like those fall campouts and cookouts at the beach. They're kind of cool. And Alchemist, did I get your comments on this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So we are off in the meeting, and where are we going next?
Well, I'm going to be a little self-serving here. Take us back to Autumn and come on, there we go, and put up by this hack that I've heard about, Captain B2. let's shred this when it's done. I tend to, in my writing about seasons, I find my spirituality comes from nature. I'm a theistic agnostic, but I love nature. I find that there's always something that connects me to the vastness of the universe when I'm in nature, waterfalls, woods, whatever. And so I tend to look at the less traditional faiths, and I went to the pagans for this one just to experience their take on autumn. And their holiday for autumnal equinox is called Maybon. And so I did a Maybon's equinox as a rhyme. And I know this is flying in the face of the 100 words or less, but if the word count police want to catch me prosecute me, they're gonna have to catch me first.
Bobby, did you want to read that, or did you want the SoundCloud played?
No. Oh, yeah, let me read it. What the hell, I'm here.
Alrighty. All right.
Yeah, when nature's cycles come to bear, as the changing seasons chill the air, the wheel of the year continues to turn. The months must pass for warmth's return. Today, light and dark are of balanced lengths. They share the hours in equal strength. Soon warmth and light begin to pale, then night and darkness will prevail. Come shorter days and longer night, we mourn the dwindling of the light. Trees will turn to red, orange, and gold as we prepare for darkness long and cold. But before tree sap ceases to flow and frigid winds begin to blow, pile high the branches, light the blazes, all join in chanting Maybon's praises. The Maybon blessings will abound as Wiccan spirits gather round. Watch carefully, don't look askance. Glimpse shades of ancient pagans dance. The bonfires cast shadows long on rites and rituals and harvest song. Decorate homes with wheat, apple, and gourd. Give thanks for harvest's rich reward. Time to turn back all the clocks and celebrate Maybon's equinox with gratitude to Mother Earth, waiting patiently for vernal rebirth. End poem.
Beautiful.
Very beautiful. Wow. Now that gave me an image of autumn. I'm a person, I grew up on ice. I grew up in Atlantic Canada where the days were extremely short in the winters. And I personally love winter. I live for winter. Everything beautiful in my life goes on in the winter. It's just, it's an amazing season. And I love the way this piece calls it out and through the autumn and connects it with, you know, everything that we get to glorify before we move into that winter, right? It's just a beautiful piece, the equinox and the changing and the, you know, I love that I love the rhyming, the couplet rhyming, beautiful touch, and your word choices. Before tree sap ceases to flow and rigid winds begin to blow, pile high the branches, light the blazes, all join in chanting Maybon's praises. Just awesome rhyming, flow, imagery, and really sends the message that, you know, it's okay. It's the equinox and the autumn coming in is okay. there's a lot of beauty that comes with it, beauty in nature and beauty in life. And well written, very well written, Bobby. I really enjoyed it. And I know your brevities from Lynn's six-line poems, and I love your brevities. But I got to say, I really do eat up your 100 words or more ones as well. I really do. I get a lot of very well done. And Alchemist, what did you feel on this one? Give Bobby your sense on this,
please.
Yeah. So this, you know, this brings out my inner Wiccan as well, you know, and I just want to go and dance out in the forest, like when I see things like this. And I think you captured it beautifully. And this year, in particular, I was really, I don't know why, I was just so affected, right, with the equinox. And I even sent a text to my boyfriend on that day, and I was just like, you know, and it was the beginning of Libra season, and he's a Libra, and I was like, you know, happy autumn equinox, and I explained to him, you know, that the day and the night is the same amount of time, you know, always trying to find balance in everything, you know, and in your relationship and in your own individuality and all this. And we're dealing with all these issues now. A couple lines, if I could, that jumped out at me. Wait a minute, where is it? This one here. The Maybomb blessings will abound as Wiccan spirits gather around. Watch carefully. Don't look askance. Glimpse shades of ancient pagans dance. That's just, I could totally see that in my mind. And I what I like about this is, number one, that just appeals to me on a personal and also just an aesthetic level, but also to remind us, right, that before all, you know, we kind of got into these patriarchal ways of thinking and religion and all this kind of things, that this is what it was, right? This is what it was at the beginning. Yeah. And I think a lot of us are starting to go back to that now and get back more into nature and get back into the natural flow and rhythms and everything of the seasons and life. And, you know, we're paying more attention to the moon cycles. And I wrote, you know, I always seem to write a poem when it's like a full moon or a new moon. And, you know, I'm really into that thing. So, this is the bonfires cast shadows long on rites and rituals and harvest songs. And then the decorating homes. There's is so much about this that I love. And I think you captured it beautifully with this poem. So thank you for it.
And I set aside my desire to sneak another violator of the 100 word rule past someone. I talked about there, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, I did it again. I feel like a child who's gotten away with a cookie. I'm glad you both enjoyed it, because it just, and you're right, it just harkens past, it harkens back to the past where we were a matriarchal, more of it, especially with pagans and Wiccans and Mother Earth. Because you don't hear anyone, say Father Earth. The Gaia is the goddess of the Earth. You don't you find anything that renewal, rebirth, regrowth. It's all a female, and so I think they're really beginning to assert themselves on that level. So I thought Maybon was a nice one to put forward. And since we're just chewing up the time here, let's see, what else have we got to read? Let me go get something else. But thank you for letting me share that one with you. I wrote that a while ago and wasn't quite sure how I felt about it. I'm glad you folks enjoyed it. And now we have something by, oh, here's a good name, Yorkie Buff. Let me grab this and put it into our inbox. There we go. Get in there. You get there. We go. They fight with me sometimes. Okay, we have Puppetry Master by Yorkie Buff. Alchemist, how do you feel about reading someone by someone called Yorkie Buff?
Well, I'm sorry. Are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am, please. Could you?
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. Yeah, this one, I love this poem. I would love to read this. Puppet mastery. Ebony eye socket, slashed mouth, strangled voice box, swallowing features, collapsed cords, carved in bone, sketched in stale blood, empty glove puppet, horse glued news, crumpled skin. End poem. should I go first on this one?
Sure.
Okay. So this, I think, you know, we're talking about all the beautiful things with autumn and nature and
yes.
everything. And this is kind of bringing, for me, this is kind of bringing Halloween to the forefront, right? And such a spooky poem, I feel like the ebony eye socket, slashed mouth. I'm getting this, it's empty glove puppet, this paper mache kind of homemade almost, I feel like, puppet that someone would make that they made it look extra creepy, I feel like. And to me, it was chilling, even though it was so short. And again, the magic of brevity when it's done well, right, is it just can give you this whole vision of something that's so frightening. And for me, it seemed more frightening because I felt like it was, like, purposely homemade, right, that this puppet. And it kind of scared me, actually, when I read this. And if you look at the image, it really, the poem actually describes the image perfectly, I feel like.
Hello.
It was creepy.
Oh, okay. I thought I got cut off. I'm like, hey, where is everyone?
We're hiding behind the desk.
Yeah, because it was so scary, right? The crumpled skin at the end. It's like, ooh, jeez. Very, very scary poem.
Well said, Alchemist. It's a powerful piece. It packs a punch. It, you know, it's dark, but it grabs you. It swallowed me. Ebony eye socket, slashed mouth, strangled voice box. Just the image and the title, Puppet Mastery, is just an amazing piece and really pulls you into a different direction. And, you know, really well done and well written for Yorkie Buff. Thank you for sharing that. And, Bobby, what was your take on this one?
I thought it was creepy. like Alchemist said, it's challenging to get that much of a scare factor into a piece that's so short. Right. But its style is very almost what I call staccato. Pops a line at you. It pops a line. You know, it's ebony eye socket, slash mouth, strangled voice box. It's just very emphatic statements. And one on top of the other, you get a very impactful piece. So the style served as the subject matter and the delivery very well. And no wonder it got a gold.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Really well said. Yeah, beautiful piece. And what do we have next for our board there, Bobby?
Okay, we have something I think a bit more uplifting. Land Alive by Charlie Girl. And, oh, excuse me. I was going to say I'll read it, but maybe I better not. I think I'm about to launch into another coughing fit. Alchemist, Diane, can you do this one, please?
Yes, I sure can. It is called Land Alive by Charlie Girl. And I have to say up front, I'm a fan of Charlie Girl's writing. I've always enjoyed Charlie Girl's writing. This land became alive when he dragged his fingers through the soil. Generations of revelation flowered along the furrows. churches sprouted up across the prairies. Temples dotted its western hills. And in the peach gleam hours of morning, you can hear the hush of angels singing hymns and poems. And I just see that it was a front page pick a day ago, and no doubt it's again a brilliant brevity packs a punch, describes the energy of the earth, the land becoming alive when he dragged his fingers through the soil. And I can only imagine that would be Father Nature or Father Time or whoever is dragging their fingers through the soil and just creating this perfect angel wings, you know, a place of serenity and calm and peace. It's just a beautiful rite, and like you said, Bobby, very uplifting. And Bobby, what did you feel on this one?
I liked it. It did have a very buoyant spirit to it. It gave the visual imagery that you've got something. I like the first two lines. I mean, just this land became alive when he dragged his fingers through the soil, and that could be, or her fingers through the soil, and it could be anything from the pioneers crossing the plains to immigrants from Europe settling in this country and having their own backyard. That they can dig, in and plant flowers and vegetables in. So it's the investment of the soul in the soil, and you can hear the hush of angels singing hymns, and how important that connection is.
Yeah, for sure. Really well said. And Alchemist, what did you have to add to this?
Yeah, I kind of saw this as she was talking about God when she mentioned that he dragged his fingers through the soil. I kind of looked at this as more of like a spiritual kind of poem that I guess because she mentions the churches sprouting up across the prairies and temples dotting the western hills. The line for me is right here, and in the peach gleam hours of morning, if you're quiet, you can hear the hush of angels singing hymns. I love the peach gleam hours of morning, and I just thought that was so beautiful. Just such a wonderful way to describe what it looks like in the morning, and you can imagine being outside in the hills and everything being sort of green and growing, and then all of a sudden you have this sunrise and it has that peach color to it. And also I'm a big angel fan, you know, I'm really in touch with my angels and everything. So that sort of touched my heart, you know, that ending part that if you listen close enough, that if we get quiet enough, that we can have these mystical experiences, that they're not something that, that is, you know, so far away from us. If we just get quiet enough, we can hear them. So, yeah, I just thought this was beautiful. This, again, I'm always amazed by these brevity writers. They say so much in so few words, and they bring, you know, such emotion and power to their writing. I thought this was beautiful. I loved it.
Okay. Diane, are you with us? You're mutating.
Yeah, I was mutating away. I very much enjoyed it as well. I am a fan of Charlie Girl's work. So, great write. And what do we have up next? I see we have one posted here.
Yeah, we have Elk and Hound by Fez, and I will go ahead and tackle that one. Hear the singing autumn hymn as ancient oaks embrace the ever-changing sensations like a spell and trance your eyes. Trace the slender legs of the elk and hound who treads along the cold and forgotten in his eyes. See the tormented and enduring withering antlers branch out to falling leaves, and elkin mane drenches down his chest like feathering moss, bearing woven fangs like the polished creek's rocks. He is the long-forgotten memories of this changing world, now standing aside you. Hear his frosted breath casting a spell. The forest comes to a rest, and memories of fading times emerge from the abyss to be embraced. End poem.
Great write. Great write. Great read. Excellent piece. Elk and Hound. Just beautifully woven together. And Alchemist, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I like the mysticism surrounding this poem. The ancient oaks embrace the ever-changing sensations like a spell entrance your eyes. And then he starts to tell us about how the withering antlers branch out to falling leaves. So it's like it's, you know, everything's sort of like dying together, right? That it's old, everything's old. This line I thought was really stunning. Bearing woven fangs like the polished creek rocks. And that stood out to me because it takes so long, right, for the rocks to get polished. And just, again, the same idea of...
Alchemist, you are breaking
up. Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, hello? You were breaking up there. Hello?
Okay. Can you hear me?
You're coming in clear.
Okay, good. I don't know if you heard this part, but bearing woven fangs like the polished creek's rocks. And I said I really like that line because it takes so long for the water to polish the rocks, right? That this happens over time. And it's the same thing with the elk that, you know, it's so old that it's sort of been working on these fangs his whole life. And hear his frosted breath casting a spell. The forest comes to a rest. And it's this whole idea of spirituality in the natural world and with the animals. And, I just thought it was a really mystical poem and ancient almost, I felt like. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, great word play on this piece and great great description there, Alchemist. I like the choice of words. Seas are tormented and enduring. Withering antlers branch out to falling trees, and elfin mane drenches down his chest like feathering moss. Another front page pick, and another beautiful front page pick, well deserving. And Bobby, what did you think of this?
I know I made some technical notes to myself on this one. I learned something from this. I was in a previous incarnation. I was an adjutant, which is an admin officer, and a wordsmith in the extreme, almost pedant. Well, I should say pedantic out of necessity, and reading, and proofreading things that word genders or not genders, nice verb tenses. Or descriptors that don't match, that don't follow the rules, are like I come to a screeching halt on them. My brain goes, wait, stop, full stop here. But I've noticed that, and I've done this myself, maybe not intentionally, but in reading this, I see sensations like an entranced your eyes, trace the slender legs of the elkin hound whom treads along. Like cold and forgotten in his eyes, whom is incorrect, but it makes me stop. It makes me stop and think about the words. It's like it's like a pebble or a stone in a stream. It just doesn't flow around over it. It hurts it. it makes me, and there's another one in here, that's the Bearing Woven Fangs, like Polish. I like the Polish Creeks Rocks. He is the long forgotten memories. Now we've got a disagreement with the verb tense, but it makes me stop again and think about the line. And I thought, if this was not deliberate, then it is awfully, awfully damn instinctive writing that would make that would cause these pauses in the reading and in the appreciation of the piece, which in itself I agree has a mystical quality to it. That you see this like the golden hind that you see in the or the white hind that you see in the enchanted forest that comes out every once in a while that's supposed to be an omen of good luck, but it has that very strong mystical quality to it. So, but it gave me something to think about in technical in my writing to you know these little speed I call them verbal speed bumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. I didn't pick up on that, but I see now that you say it, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
very, very interesting.
Okay, and now I'm not doing my job again. Okay. Ooh. We got anybody out there from Michigan? You're as close. Are you still near the Atlantic Canada coast? That is cold. That is some cold territory. The worst. We were in skiing, and I'm trying to pick up this link as we're talking. We were skiing in Vancouver one year, and someone who arranged the vacation very foolishly arranged it in January, and and we got to the top of the run, and it was like 40, like you said, 40 below. And we were right into the lodge, and my friend Beth, who I miss greatly because she got reclaimed by the maker, she goes charging in there with her wry New Jersey wit, and she says, "Drinks for everyone and fresh horses for my men." Bless her heart. So we have April 8, Looking Out into the Michigan Trees by Free Wit. And Alchemist, have we had you read in a while?
Sure, I would love to read it. Okay.
Okey-doke.
Sun on the balcony, warm, not quite yet a sun to tan by. The buds on the trees, branches small, like children's lined along picnic tables to become adults in green silk someday, but socially spaced now, not touching each other, waiting to be friendly like in New York City. Our own Central Park, in our backyard, just beyond our porch, looking out into the Michigan trees. A nice sun today, comfortable, as she and I sit set a little apart, feeling the breeze. Oh, so sweet.
Beautiful piece and beautiful, right? And we are looking at another front page pick. We're just getting all these front page picks today and just so beautifully written and flowing nicely. Great wordplay imagery to you know, our own Central Park in our backyard just beyond our porch, looking out into the Michigan trees. I've never been to Michigan, but I can imagine looking out into the trees of growth and what that must feel like. And it will describe here, beautifully described. And Bobby, what did you think for that one?
Well, I'm a Midwesterner. So Michigan is a neighbor. I'm from Chicago. And Michigan is a neighbor. And I have a deep appreciation for autumn, for the colors of autumn, for the colors of the different states that I haven't seen yet. This description of what they're experiencing, and this is spring, April 8, and it is just you know, it's just starting to break. The snow is starting to go away, and you want desperately to go out, sit outside. They said the buds on the trees are small. You want to go out. You want to appreciate the change in the season, but it just isn't quite there. But it's a nice sun today, comfortable, as she and I sat a little apart, feeling the breeze. And there's just the describable satisfaction in being able to share yet another seasonal change with someone that matters to you. So this is a beautiful piece and almost a love story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead,
you want me to go? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's I kind of felt like that too, especially I love the way he compares the buds on the tree to children, and that they going to become adults in green silk someday. Socially spaced for now, not touching each other, waiting to be friendly, like in New York City, that the buds on the trees are still like a little far apart, right? Like they're there and they're getting ready to come to life, but they're still a little far apart. But also how he connects that as she and I sit a little apart, that it's almost like they too are going to grow into something more beautiful, right? That just like the buds on the trees are going to grow into these beautiful leaves very soon, I feel like this love story is going on at the same time, right? Where that this relationship, and I don't know if this is a new relationship or what, but it's almost like, you know, they're also growing into something beautiful and something that's going to be you know, refreshing and nurturing and offer shade and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I definitely picked up on the love story aspect of this as well. Just beautiful.
Very beautiful. And I like how, you know, so nonchalantly, sun on the balcony, warm. Not quite yet a sun to dance by. That little detail thrown in there just makes the first stanza and opens it up to what comes next. It's just an awesomely written piece. And Bobby, did I get your comments on this? I think I did.
Yes, ma'am, I think you did.
Okay, and where are we moving along to next?
Well, actually, we're down to the bottom. So I'm going to, while we're reading, I would encourage the three of us to go picking through our histories and see if we can throw some things out there that might be seasonally appropriate. But our last one here is Horizon Bound by Amy Mundell. And why don't I go ahead and give that a read? We have Horizon Bound. And she wrote this an hour ago, bless her heart. Feet push at ground below into sky above, feathers brushing grasses, farewell kisses to the south. Cloud upon cloud, gliding free, horizon bound, sky and sea. But all of that beauty lies not at her core. There you'll find her wistful, ever longing for the shore. Eyes scan ripples, hope swing swells breast as she spies trees on horizon's crest. End poem. And she writes in her author's note, land is on the is always in the mind of a flying bird. What a beautiful statement.
What a powerful statement. What a powerful statement. Land is always on the mind of a flying bird, for sure. Like, you know, where do I land? How do I get out of this vast sky? It's a beautiful piece, a horizon bound, well written, and very well read, Bobby. And what was your take on this one?
I liked the in reading her author notes, I thought what an inspired piece. that we don't, she reminded me of a thought I've had, a fleeting thought, when I watch birds. I have new windows in my house, and let me tell you something, you haven't lived until you've lived in a house where every single window opens, and and they open when you want them to. They're not painted, stuck shut, nailed shut, screwed shut, corroded shut, the operative word being shut. And I have one in my water closet that I find myself opening every morning and watching and listening to the birds. And when they take off, I watch them and I wonder, do they know where they're going?
I wonder. You know, Bobby, I just discovered that we haven't been grabbing the carryovers from last week.
Well, I thought we had some we had a bunch at the top.
Yeah, but we didn't go through all those yet, so we still do have some.
Oh, good, good, good. I thought we had. I thought. Oh my word. Oh my word. Yes.
We might have carryovers.
And I thought I had grabbed them. I wondered where they'd gone. It's that tricky little read further thing got me. Thank you for catching that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, what about carryovers?
I got tripped up by that. Okay, let me.
I just threw one up there because I thought we were out, and then when I looked, I was like, nope, we got 100.
Oh, thank you. You know, I just, seriously, I went to that, I found it, I thought, oh, we got bunches of them. And then it vanished, and I didn't realize that it had collapsed on itself.
Yeah, it'll funny way of doing it. So let's grab one for next.
Okay, well, I got one right now. Let me paste it up there. And we have Autumn Leaves by Crystal H. Would you like to tackle that one?
Absolutely. Remembering the days of autumn leaves. Crimson colors paint the crunch of dry, stiff leaves rushing in the wind. She wanders past the walnut twine of crisp, rigid stems of a quill pen. Diary pages dwindle like a tumbleweed of the journey of past years. Barrels of brass and beaded buttons tickling the fibers of the plaid cashmere. Cherry, butterscotch, and tangerine threads weave in the pockets of a splintered bark. She whispers through the memories of a quiet day in the park. Hardwood covers bookmarks with dimpled dangle of a golden leaf. She gazes to the yellow circle, remembering the days of autumn leaves. What a nice piece. It's so rich and energizing and really rejuvenating. Beautiful piece. And Bobby, what did you think of this?
Oh, exactly what you just said. The visual imagery in this is so rich. The colors, the descriptions of barrels of brass and beaded buttons. It's just diary pages dwindle like a tumbleweed. And then starts, even the opening, crimson colors paint the crunch of dry, stiff leaves brushing in the wind. This captures the smells, the textures, the feeling of autumn so beautifully.
It certainly does. It captures it and it paints it on a canvas for us to admire. It's beautiful. I mean, it puts so much into the image than actually the leaves in the image. It throws in the energy. It throws in a smile. It throws in velvet memories and golden leaves. It's just beautiful the way it's written. And Alchemist, what did you feel on this one, my dear?
Yeah, I agree. I felt the same way. And this one, it just made me want to go outside so much and put a nice sweater on and take my book and, you know, just kind of sit and read in a park and just enjoy all of the nature around me. I really, really just love the tickling the fibers of her plaid cashmere, cherry, butterscotch, and tangerine threads weave in the pockets of a splintered bark. I just thought that was so beautiful. And the velvet memories of a quiet day in the park, that it's the, you know, almost kind of what we were talking about earlier, just being on your own and having those moments of just being with yourself and enjoying the beauty that's around you and doing what you want to do for the day. You know, it's just, it's priceless. And I thought she captured that really beautifully in this poem. Just lovely.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Capturing it beautifully. And one of the things that stood out was the alliteration in stanza two. Barrels of brass and beaded buttons. Like, that was so intricate. I don't know that word. Woven together just beautifully. It just flows so nicely. And Bobby, where are we headed next?
Well, we are headed to Looking Back by CRL17. And I have no idea who's read last or who's reading next, so I will just grab this puppy and read it. We all sound so great, I can't tell. Okay, interesting, image in the top of it too.
I don't see it posted.
Oh yes, ma'am. It's out there. Let's see. Yep. There it is.
Hold
at
on.
The bottom. Oh. You know what? I know what happened. I tripped myself up. Let's try this again. I drifted into a late night poets group. How dare I?
Yeah, that's. I'm going in between the two also, and I'm lost right now too. Hold on, give me a minute.
There we go. There it is. Yeah, you know, and that was totally unintentional. I'm very mindful of which group I'm in, and I looked and went, "What? Wait." Apparently, I'm having the problems with disappearing poetry today. Okay, so now we have Looking Back by CRL. And it's in the correct group. And so
okay,
I will
try. Okay. All right.
Yes,
I got you. I'll see where you are. All right.
Sorry. I just back myself up, rolled up newspaper. And as I look back at the endless questions of my existence, I clean out the dusty corners of my heart where all the secrets and mysteries lie. Looking into the raging sun that burns the corruption inside my soul, travel across the forgotten lands of my neglected life, tear open the psychic nerve endings where thoughts lie exposed to the winds, pay all my fines for the graffiti I have left on heaven's door, broken poetry and rhymes too late to repair the damage done by words never meant to be spoken. I can no longer manage the fires of the sun. I can only reduce its flame. The cuts may heal, but the scars never fade.
Mm-mm-mm. Yep.
Excellent read, Bobby. And Alchemist, what do you take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, this hits hard, this poem, because it's so, it just, so many things resonate for me in this. The endless questions of my existence. I clean out the dusty corners of my heart where all the secrets and mysteries lie. Right. And just that idea of just taking inventory of your life. You know, we all get to that point where we start to do that. But just to say it so beautifully. And looking into the raging sun that burns the corruption inside my soul. Like, just you can feel that heat. You know, you can feel when you look back with regret on things. And you do, you have that burning in your soul that you just wish that you could change things. The neglected life, that's another thing that really affected me. It's not even like so much that we do things that are bad so much as we just neglect ourselves. We neglect things that we want to do and things that we want to become even. The psychic nerve endings where thoughts lie exposed to the wind. And then the big line for me is pay all my fines for the graffiti I left on heaven's door. Just so much here to talk about, the things that we say that we shouldn't have said, the things that we don't say that we should have, the thing, you know, just all the regrets that we go back and we look at our lives. And that at the end, he says, you know, the cuts may heal, but the scars never fade away. And that's true. And I think that a lot of what we're all trying to accomplish these days is to, you know, see the beauty in those scars, because there's nothing else to do, right? I mean, you can't live in the regret of everything that you did or didn't do. And I see this, him sort of like, you know, almost like going back and forth in his mind, I feel like, about that, that he's trying to resolve, like he's trying to come to that place of balance between the regrets and things like that. And it's still bothering him, I feel like. But very, very deep, very rich. And I think very something that we can all really relate to in life. Beautiful, beautiful poem.
Very much. Very, very beautiful piece. And Bobby, what did you think? You read that beautifully.
I think it's deeply philosophical. As Alchemist said, it is an examination of what one has done with one's life. And I can only reduce its flame. The cuts may heal, but the scars never fade away. And I think that's true of all of us. And rather than belabor that, let's see if we can eke one more poem into our time together. And I'm going to, let's see, here we go. Oh, random scribbler. Oh, got to get that out there. And the rest of them apparently have SoundClouds. So, okay, let's put that up there for random scribbler. Get out there. Get out there. Oh, come on. Don't do that to me. Apparently my – oh, there you go. There we go. Keys are – well, I tell you, wash my hands. Can't do a damn thing with them. Okay, we have Let the Untold Unfold by Random Scribbler. And this is a jump ball, so who would like it? No volunteers? What's that?
Go ahead, Alchemist, if you want to go ahead and read this one.
All righty. Stories are meant to be told, yet some of them remain forever inside the fold. Could be that secrets dark are hidden, undetected within them, or sorrow deep is concealed, unsearched inside them. Causes could be countless, pointing would be pointless. The truth is, unseen though they are, hurting still they are. Pain gives strength, but unnecessary it would be for it to stretch. Why let heart go on bearing? Why let the soul go on enduring? Life is too precious to keep on suffering. If possible, let go of the tight hold. Let the untold unfold. Yes, right.
Wow.
Just a perfect, you know, follow up to the poem that we just did. That there's, you know, we're torturing ourselves with all this. In my earlier poem, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, right? And this is just wrapping it up beautifully, right? Let go of the tight hold of it all. Just let the untold unfold. Just let it be, you know. And this is, pain gives strength, but unnecessary it would be for it to stretch. You know, just
this whole idea of we grow through the pain and we even create through the pain. But at the same time, it's like you don't want to, like, hold on to it too tightly because you have to let that be, right? You have to let that be in order to keep growing. So I just thought this was beautiful.
It was certainly beautiful, beautiful piece and well said, Agnes. So true. And it did follow up quite nicely with the last one. Pain gives strength, but unnecessary it would be for it to stretch. Why let heart go on bearing? Let untold unfold. I mean, yeah, let it be, right? You know,
yeah.
That's the way I see this, is we have to let it be. We life is too precious to keep on suffering. And I like the messages in this. Causes could be countless. Pointing would be pointless. The truth is, unseen though they are, hurting still they are. It's these stories and secrets that come out of everywhere and have a chance to surprise us and throw us off in left field. And then what I like about the ending, if possible, let go of the tight hold. Let the untold unfold. And that is so true. Like, I'm a firm believer that we suffer because we choose to suffer. You know,
yeah.
when I reached 400 pounds, I got there because I ate myself there and I was suffering. And that was because of my own doing. And I think for myself in my last few years of my life, I have found the solution to suffering. And I have started to realize if I don't do it, I won't suffer, because suffering is not done to me by others. It's done to me by me.
Right.
And the realization of that and let go of that tight hold. I don't have a tight hold on suffering anymore. I make choices today that are usually for the better good. Before I made choices, I would eat two pizzas at a time, right? I don't make those choices today because I choose not to suffer. And I love the way this really wraps its head around that. Well done. And Bobby, what did you think of this?
Well, I think it was a very profound piece. I think it's very powerful, very impactful. Pain gives strength, but unnecessary it would be for it to stretch. Why let the heart go on bearing, why let the soul go on enduring? Life is too precious to keep on suffering. Precisely. I think this is one of those pieces that it makes you look at yourself and go, like you said, am I allowing this to happen, or is this just happening around me? And it's like some of the things that Eleanor Roosevelt used to say, and I'm probably going to misquote this. Something like, You cannot diminish me. You cannot belittle me. You cannot insult me if I don't permit you to do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Very well said. A piece that packs a punch again, and the messages. I love when a piece puts the messages out there that, you know, like, are helpful to us as human beings, because we struggle in this world. We don't always make it on like sweet apple pie. We struggle in this world. And the message here is let go, you know, let go. And I love the message in this one. And I don't know now, do we have time for a final?
Well, we have 2 minutes left. And this is a show about brevities. So we have a SoundCloud. Do we want to read it, or do we want to – can we get Peter Allen's SoundCloud out there?
If Pam was in the background with us, and she would be able to post the SoundCloud for us. I don't know if she's still with us, because at this hour, I think she might be gone. So actually, it is 12:59. I'm going to go ahead and thank you both for calling in and working the show with us today. Awesome show. Great rights. We apologize. We missed over some carryovers, but we will carry over the carryovers next week. And,
I can only say bad technician, bad technician. My fault.
It's doable by all of us, Bobby. It happens. So with that, you ladies have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next week.
You betcha.
Thank you, ladies.